There were seven of them, all on cots, all barely conscious. The villagers had moved them into their new communal meeting hall. The walls and floor were bare cement. The air was cold and damp. Of course they're sick, I thought. I asked the villagers who had been taking care of these people. They said no one. It wasn't safe. I noticed that the door had been locked from the outside. The villagers were clearly terrified. They cringed and whispered. Some kept their distance and prayed. Their behavior made me angry. Not at them, you understand. Not as individuals, but what they represented about our country. After centuries of foreign oppression, exploitation, and humiliation, we were finally reclaiming our rightful place as humanity's middle kingdom. We were the world's richest and most dynamic superpower, masters of everything from outer space to cyberspace. It was the dawn of what the world was finally acknowledging as the Chinese century. And yet so many of us still live like these ignorant peasants, as stagnant and superstitious as the earliest Yang Xiao savages. I was still lost in my grand cultural criticism when I knelt to examine the first patient. She was running a high fever, 40 degrees centigrade, and she was shivering violently. Barely coherent, she whimpered slightly when I tried to move her limb. There was a wound in her right forearm, a bite mark. As I examined it closer, I realized that it wasn't from an animal. The bite radius and teeth mark had to have come from a small or possibly young human being. Although I hypothesized this to be the source of the infection, the actual injury was surprisingly clean. I asked the villagers again who had been taking care of these people. Again, they told me no one. I knew this could not be true. The human mouth is packed with bacteria, even more so than the most unhygienic dog. If no one had cleaned this woman's wound, why wasn't it throbbing with infection? I examined the six other patients. All show similar symptoms. All had similar wounds on various parts of their bodies. I asked one man, the most lucid of the group, who or what had inflicted these injuries. He told me it had happened when they had tried to subdue him. Who? I asked. I found patient zero behind the locked door of an abandoned apartment across town. He was 12 years old. His wrists and feet were bound with plastic packing twine. Although he'd rubbed off the skin around his bonds, there was no blood. There was also no blood on his other wounds, not on the gouges on his leg or arms, or from the large dry gap where his right big toe had been. He was writhing like an animal. A gag muffled his growls. At first, the villagers tried to hold me back. They warned me not to touch him, that he was cursed. I shrugged them off and reached for my mask and gloves. The boy's skin was as cold and gray as the cement on which he lay. I could find neither his heartbeat nor his pulse. His eyes were wild, wide, and sunken back in their sockets. They remained locked on me like a predatory beast. Throughout the examination, he was inexplicably hostile, reaching for me with his bound hands and snapping at me through his gag. His movements were so violent, I had to call for two of the largest villagers to help me hold him down. At first, they wouldn't budge, cowering in the doorway like baby rabbits. I explained that there was no risk of infection if they used gloves and masks. When they shook their heads, I made it an order, even though I had no lawful authority to do so. That was all it took. The two oxen knelt beside me. One held the boy's feet while the other grasped his hands. I tried to take a blood sample and instead extracted only brown, viscous matter. As I was withdrawing the needle, the boy began another bout of violent struggling.